Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about different professions from the people who know. Each week I speak to a new guest with a fascinating job. I talk to marketers, veterinarians, professional snowboarders, astronomers, you name it. You'll hear about their personal paths to doing what they do, the skills required, and the tools they use for the job. I'm Laura Leoncini, and today my guest is Marco Alberti, Italian ambassador in Kazakhstan, an advocate of open diplomacy. Marco, thank you for being my guest. I'd like to ask you what you do today as an ambassador, and what path did you follow to get there?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me here. It's a privilege to share this conversation. You said passion for me is what gets you moving. So passion is the origin of my professional background, which is a public-private professional background. And, I learned during my career that without passion, you can only be a good professional. But if you are passionate, you can turn average into excellence, which is something that is extremely required today to create value. The most interesting evolution of any job today is the ability to create value. Diplomacy moved from status to value. We need also, as a diplomat, we need to be able to prove what we are able to do. That's a key point of evolution that modern and contemporary diplomacy is going through. And I entered diplomacy in 2000. And, you know, in that year, just to give an example, I mean, the web had less than 400 million users, and now it has 5 billion users. So I give you the idea of how fast the society and the work that we are doing has evolved, you know. It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting in how, you know, diplomacy is facing the new challenge, global challenges of our time. So 23...
So, yeah, you need to adapt to the exactly. pace of today.
You need to adapt, and you need to job crafting your job all the time, you know. There's nothing, fixed today. And that's it. And then my professional career has been dedicated to the cooperation between public and private sector, economic diplomacy, diplomacy of growth. I spent some years inside a company, an energy company, a utility, Italian utility, trying to mix my background, my diplomatic background, with a managerial attitude. And I think it's the best way, to concretely learn how to face these great global challenges that we are facing today. Any complex challenge is always a question of public-private cooperation, sustainability, fight against climate change or food security. It's impossible to face these challenges without a strong cooperation between companies and governments, international organizations, and also individuals, NGOs.
I see that sustainability was at the very beginning of your interest when you started your professional path as a sustainability manager at a company in Milan. How did you jump from the private sector to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, where you started your 11 years career there?
That was due to passion. I mean, my passion was international relations. And the way I managed international relations at the beginning of my career was sustainability. So, you know, thanks to this passion, I wanted to represent my country at the international level. And it is exactly what I try to do through diplomacy. It's exactly what I'm doing now as an ambassador. I'm proud of being an ambassador because, you know, I think that it's one of the privileges that you can have to represent the country. So, you know, I started on the international level, working on sustainability, and then I jumped to the public career of diplomacy. Let me just add that it's incredible how sustainability, the concept of sustainability, have developed over these years. In that time, it was a sort of, cause-related marketing or a tool to create reputation. And now sustainability has become a strategic part of any, you know, development in public and private organization. It has become something evolved into a sort of creating shared value more than simple sustainability. So at the international level, it's been very useful for me to have been in touch with this, you know, experience of sustainability manager.
Did you have to pass like a public exam in order to enter the Foreign Affairs Ministry?
Yes, it's one of the hardest public exam in Italy. Very tough, very selective. We were 2,400 for more or less 45 available positions.
Wow.
Yes, you have to study, but again...
So there's no other way, yeah? Yeah.
No.
If you want to work for the ministry, you have to pass that exam.
Exactly. Okay. It's a public selection. And, you know, again, if you are passionate about something, you're ready to bear, I mean, the effort and to dedicate yourself to studying, and then, I mean, to absorb, I mean, the experience, to transform the experience, to turn the experience into practice.
So then you entered, and then you started, you know, I see a chief of staff to the ambassador, and then you climbed up the ladder, deputy consul, and then head of section. At some point, you did also institutional communication and media. And what is interesting that we were talking about just before the interview is that then you, there was a kind of like a partnership, an exchange, a swap between public and private. Can you tell me about this experience you had?
Yeah, I intimately believe that if you want to enrich yourself, your professional background, you need to be open to different experiences. You need to be exposed to exchange knowledge with people or colleagues from different, I mean, industries, you know. And if you want to understand how to manage the global challenges, the public-private, I mean, the cooperation, you need to be open. And I took advantage of a law that we have in Italy, which allows a sort of a swap between public and private executives. As a diplomat, you can spend some years working inside a company, and there is a private an executive from the private company working inside the Minister of Foreign Affairs for some time. And that's incredibly useful to mingle the different professional experience. It's extremely useful for you to understand how the private companies look at the reality. It's extremely useful for the Minister of Foreign Affairs that a private manager injects some managerial content in strategic matters, in the management, the public management of strategic matters like energy or food security or whatever. Extremely useful, extremely interesting, extremely challenging.
Fascinating. So you worked for an energy company in Italy for quite some years, 9 years. What was that, let's say, the lessons that you have taken from the private sector that you were able to then adapt or re-transpose into the public sector?
Yes, I think that one of the lessons, you have mentioned the importance of adapt yourself, I mean, to the incredibly quick change that we are facing. So that's the first point. I mean, don't think of having, I mean, a job which is the same for eternally. The successful people are the ones who are able to adapt quickly and deeply to the transformation. And the second lesson is connected to the first one, that it's very relevant in your profession, in professional lives, you know, to move from the comfort zone to the creative zone, I would say. Comfort zone is I do what I have always done. You have to move to a challenge zone, which is I would try to do what I haven't ever done. But there is a third step, which is much more important now, is to move to a creative zone, which means that I would like to think of something that I have never thought before. So think about something that you haven't ever thought before, because, I mean, the world is changing very fast, and you need to be able to predict what's going on and to adapt yourself and your professional background, I mean, to the quick changes you are facing. There's a concept of leadership by John Maxwell, leadership, ability, I mean, to adapt. That's very important. Second lessons, don't be focused on being in charge, but, you know, focus yourself on how to take care of the people you are in charge of, because that's the secret for a sort of a new servant leadership, which is much more useful today than the command and control leadership style that was working in the past.
How do you see that, you know, servant leadership and leadership, which I like very much instead of leadership, how do you see that in your everyday job? You know, you're an ambassador. What is your everyday life practically?
That's difficult to describe, because one of the privileges that we have as a diplomat is the number of activities, different activities that we are performing every day. Just to give an example, a couple of days ago, I had the visit of our Minister of Foreign Affairs to Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. And we dedicated some time to prepare this visit on the political, economic, and cultural sides. So, I mean, we had to organize a visit to prepare documents to search for some new opportunities for companies to increase and consolidate our economic cooperation. But at the same time, we have, to protect our national interest abroad. So we have, to grant that the business environment in this country improves. We have to cooperate with the Kazakh authority in order, to have more investment, more Italian investment in this country, but at the same time to protect those investments. We have, we provide consular services to our national communities, the compatriots living in Kazakhstan. And we also, try to represent the country also in different fora that are active in the country. So this is a privilege, It's a privilege to have a great scope of activity. We never get bored. I think that one of the most interesting aspects of a job is when you never get bored. You can be tired. Being tired is a sort of, a positive feeling. The drama is when the problem is when you get bored, but it never happens when you are a diplomat.
And let me ask a couple of questions I usually ask about a job. What do you find to be the most fascinating, hence easy, I would say, part of your job? And what part makes you tired, for example? Like, what part is tiring, like mentally or physically tiring or tolling, let's say?
Negotiation is tiring because, you move on step by step. You need to be patient. You need to respect the different cultures that, characterize the people you are in front of you. So respect and respectful negotiation is really tiring, is fascinating, but it's tiring. Or when you have, try to, unleash some creativity in order to, unblock, the bureaucracy that sometimes, stops or makes the work more difficult. That's very tiring. And, the third point could be, to interact with people, particularly because, digitalization has made people, inclined to instant satisfaction, and it's not when you have them to work in the public sector, instant satisfaction is, very difficult. So we don't have the time, the reaction time of any, platforms, or we can't, react so fast as Amazon, Google, or some other, tech companies, but we need to provide quality services. And again, it's tiring. It's very easy to provide an average service. It's much more complicated and tiring to provide an excellent service, which is our goal.
So on the other end of the spectrum, what is easy?
For me, representing my country is easy because I love my country and because I think that we have a huge potential to express as Italy. Italy helped me to make my work easier.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a great interest in our country, in Kazakhstan and in any other country where I used to live. So that's very easy. To promote Italy is something that gives you the satisfaction and enhance your pride of being Italian. So it doesn't cost me too much, to organize events, promotional events, to help Italy to increase and improve its international positioning. And that's the easiest thing for me.
What I find fascinating also in the diplomatic career is that you then travel to various countries. And I think there is a rotation of 3 years. Every 3 years you need to change countries. Is that still the case?
Yes, we are nomads. That's another interesting point of my career in this time, because I'm a professional nomad working in a country which is based on a nomadic culture.
Oh,
we are
fantastic.
Nomads, and nomads, know very well that, they have to move. It's part of the background, the DNA of the nomads, and we are professional nomads. So I think that, there's a trick for any nomad. The trick is living in a country with the idea that he has to live there forever. Because if you think that you have to move away in some years, it's a sort of countdown. I don't want to live in a country with a countdown in my mind. I want to live in this country. My effort is living here with the idea that I have to live here forever to take advantage of any second of my staying in Kazakhstan. Then, the moment when you have to leave has to take you by surprise, That's a secret, probably. And people always focus on the difficult of leaving a place where you have spent time. I always see the opportunities and the enrichment that you have changing every 3-4 years, the place you are live. And I see how my kids are enriching themselves. I mean, facing and interacting with different cultures.
Understanding different cultures, for sure. I'm very intrigued by what you said before, but data-driven diplomacy versus digital diplomacy. And it's one of the topics that I usually tackle on most of my podcasts, my shows, is how does, you know, the digital world, the AI, VR, and basically the digitalization of our life change your job? So what is your take on this?
First of all, there's a great difference between digital diplomacy and data-driven diplomacy. The first concept is a digitalization of the tools that diplomats use in order to perform their daily activity. Data diplomacy is how big data, are changing the way we do diplomacy, the concept of diplomacy itself, the services, the values that we can create. And I think that, you know, digital technologies are changing deeply, not only the way we perform diplomacy, but the mindset. So we are moving towards a sort of, predictive diplomacy. The idea to have a lot of data to predict what's going to happen in one country. We are necessarily, asked to interact with different stakeholders. You know, I think of, influencer. Commercial economic diplomacy is more and more interested in sentiment analysis, or how, an industry sector is developing in one country, or negotiation. Can you imagine how is it changing? The way you prepare a negotiation when you have big data, to study the counterpart, or how impactful, the digital technology are on cybersecurity, which is key part of our activity. So, the changes are huge. On the other side, it was impossible to expect that diplomacy to keep the same than 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And we need to take up this new responsibility to adapt. I was reading an article which said that 65% of kids who are 6 years old today will do a job that does not exist yet. So diplomacy will keep on existing, but it will be a different diplomacy, innovative diplomacy. And in order to innovate and to be able to absorb this quick change, you need to be open.
And I know that you've written a book, actually, about this. Can you tell me more about it?
About openness?
Your book.
The book, yes. Open Diplomacy is a book which tells my experience as a diplomat inside a company, inside the NEL, and the lesson learned that I had the opportunity, to absorb during that time. Open diplomacy is probably what a suggestion that I gave myself. Be open. Be able to interact all the time, not only with the classical, ordinary stakeholders, but be able to be open to multi-stakeholderism, which is probably the future of our diplomacy. Be able to be to create a sort of platform thinking. Diplomacy, the future of diplomacy will be based on platform thinking, how you can connect and interconnect. We are expected to be a sort of system orchestrator, as it happens in the information technology. Any platform needs a system orchestrator. And I believe that the system orchestrator of the promotion of our national country interest abroad is diplomacy. So, that's how I learned, to create a sort of innovative community, public and private innovative community, as a tool to accelerate the creation of public value through diplomacy.
I do see a lot of value in what you're saying. And I wonder how far or how close are we, knowing that you work in diplomacy, from this ideal world with an innovative diplomacy? What are the challenges that you're facing today? Because you seem to be a very, fast forward thinker, and you do see the future. You can picture the future. Now, are your colleagues, not only in your country but in other countries, thinking along the same lines, or what are the challenges to get there?
good question. I mean, you know, there's a problem that digitalization moves on at exponential speed. And while organizations, particularly if they are complex, they move on at, logarithmic pace. So you have always a gap between the speed that technology and digitalization are forcing and the speed of the transformation of the organization. But I think that our responsibility is not fixing ourselves on the final result, but is giving our contribution to accelerate a little bit, I mean, the evolution. And, you know, and I think that there are very encouraging steps also in our public administration. We can't expect that the public administration has the same level of speed or efficiency of a private company. It's impossible. But the point is to reduce the gap between public and private, absorbing some managerial style and competence from the private sector, giving the private sector the idea that the public institutions are necessary in order to make a national system competitive. No company is competitive if the ecosystem is not. So this is a very key point. I think that many diplomats are ready. Sometimes they are courageous enough, and sometimes they are not. But the idea that we have to move on, to innovate, to cooperate, in order to be open, in order to innovate and improve our career is absolutely clear. And probably a concrete help can come from connecting our national diplomacy with other countries' diplomacy to exchange and to increase the stock of knowledge, to exchange experiences, best practices, and so on.
And to the young listeners that are listening today, young men and young women, what is your main suggestion as to how to enter your line of work?
Oh, I think that, you know, you need to ask yourself if you are really interested in representing your country. Diplomacy is a great game, but it sucks a lot of energy. So it needs passion, it needs dedication, and it needs consistency. So ask yourself, first step, ask yourself if you are passionate about this. Second, you know, dedicate your time to study, because, I mean, the exam is tough, but the promise on the perspective of the professional career that we are doing is fascinating. And once you have entered diplomacy, be open to be a factor of change of diplomacy, which means not transforming everything, which is respecting the tradition, but injecting some new energies, new content, you know, new opportunities that you can bring into the career. The career can give you opportunities, but you can also give opportunities to the career to grow and improve.
Marco, this has been of utmost interest and importance. So thank you very much for giving your 25-minute contribution. It was very packed, and I'm very happy that you managed to really talk about a lot of topics.
Thanks a lot, and good luck to everybody.
Important keywords I take from this interview: leadership versus leadership, the importance to adapt, data-driven diplomacies versus digital diplomacy, and predictive diplomacy as a way to innovate. And for the young generation listening today, if you're interested in representing your country, giving it passion, dedication, and consistency, then pursue a diplomatic career. I'm Laura Leoncini, and I'll be back next week for another episode of Job Tales with a brand new guest, same time next week on your favorite podcast platform.